Hello there.
Hello. So firstly, can you tell me where do you come from and where has your career taken you so far?
My name's Andy Scott. I've been a musician for about 40 years. I went to the Royal Northern College of Music studying saxophone, and that was in 1985. Mm-hmm. I went there in 1984 and they rejected me. So and they said, go away and practice for a year. So I did.
Okay.
Took a bit of a risk, didn't apply anywhere else, came back, and then that's how I ended up in Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just building a music career in Manchester over the years, which is what I continue to do today. And it's just, when I started off, I think about this, you know, keeping it quite simple. I play the saxophone, I write music, and I create new projects, creative projects and groups and mm-hmm. collaborations. And I was doing that when I was about 15. I'm still doing the same thing. It's really, really exciting. But Band on the Wall has played quite a big part in that.
Yeah, excellent. That's very good to hear. Can you remember how you first came to know Band on the Wall?
Yeah, very clearly. Again, when I was a student, 18 years old, every Thursday, Band on the Wall had some live jazz on. And we used to, a whole group of us used to come down every Thursday. It was brilliant. We didn't actually necessarily know who was playing because we knew that the people that were being booked, and Ian Kroll was doing the booking at that point, were such good quality.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, there was a vibe, you know. It was a fantastic place to be. And at that point, there was a fella on the door called Horace,
mm-hmm.
and he was great. He was just very welcoming, and it became a kind of... Well, I learned about 10 years later, it became a real sort of meeting point for musicians as well, not just a gig venue. So after, I'll skip a little bit forward. There's a band here, this flyer I've got. I've got to show it to you. Right, that was what I did.
Okay.
So what you're looking at is like an A5 flyer. It's got some tour dates on the back, including Band on the Wall, I think.
Yeah.
And that was the first group I had post music college. It was like a jazz funk quintet called Purple Circle. And I was badgering Ian Kroll. And I'd never played here before at Band on the Wall, where we're sitting now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was badgering Ian Kroll. And I was like, oh, come on, you know, I've got this band. I'm writing some music. Some great players in it. There were some great players in it. Because Steve Williams was playing bass.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Wilson, incredible drummer, still is.
Mm-hmm.
John Ellis as well. I mean, John, again, you know, a massive name in the Manchester music scene. And there was a really uber-talented vibes player. So it's like saxophone, myself and vibes frontline, Mike Hamnett, who now lives in Spain, actually. But, yeah, so I would sort of say to Ian, you know, come on, can we have a gig? And he was like, no, no one knows who you are. He didn't say it like that, but he was, of course, he was thinking about the business side. And so I said, listen, you know, trust me, can we just do one gig and I'll get a crowd in? And he did. He took a risk. He gave us an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And for a young band and for a local band, that was a massive thing. So we did get a good crowd and people liked it, fortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ian was fine. You're right, okay, yeah, let's get the band back in here again, and we did that several times.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of opened the door to me getting to know Ian Kroll,
mm-hmm.
and that's what led to the big group and the recording the first album on the Band on the Wall label.
Yes, that brings me to another question I have.
Mm-hmm.
I have more written down here.
Yeah.
Because then I don't forget. So we contacted you, apparently, in the 90s?
Yeah, that was right, because I knew Ian and that history with the band Purple Circle. Also, at that point, I used to love coming down here watching a band run by Dave Hassel, the incredible percussionist drummer called Epitos, which I ended up playing in. I've played him for quite a long time now, and I've had a duo with Dave for 30 years. But yeah, Ian contacted me and said, look, I've had this idea. We've got called a sort of anniversary of Band on the Wall. How about, and it was totally his idea. He said, what about getting a big kind of saxophone group together with rhythm section? I was like, right, okay, let's talk about it a bit more. And he was fantastic. So he applied to the Arts Council, received some funding to enable that album to happen at Inner City Music. And it just meant I was in heaven because I could write all this music for 12 saxophone players, from the sopranino, the really tiny one, right down to bass sax, and rhythm section, piano, bass, drums, write all the music, and I knew who I was writing for, which is a really lovely thing. And then we recorded the album July 1996 over two nights.
Okay.
And there's...
How did it go?
It was... Well, the first night wasn't great. And I know, and everyone was a little bit down.
Yeah.
But we got some, you know, there are great players in the bands, you know, but bearing in mind then, you know, it's live. And, you know, technology wasn't what it was. So you can't edit the way you can now, or to the degree, the same with mixing. So there was a bit of pressure on the second night, which actually, in hindsight, was probably a good thing, because the second night went really well. And I think apart from one track, they all came from live on the second night. But there were some classic moments in there, because the Band on the Wall bar had, which was quite near the stage at that point, it wasn't as far back as it is now, it was at the side, near the front, had the old cash tills. And there are some really quiet moments in these sort of reflective ballads, and you just hear this cash till opening and ringing. It's hilarious. It was definitely live.
Yeah, that still happens now.
Right.
Downstairs,
yeah. But I was very grateful to Ian for trusting me with those kind of projects. Mm. And then, you know, over the years, this is in the 90s, and from 2000... you know, I was playing quite a lot here, especially with Epitos.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another friend of mine, Paul Mitchell Davidson. And I'm very grateful. There's a generation of players who are a little bit older than me, like Dave Hassel, like Paul Mitchell Davidson, who were very good to me when I was about 20, 25, mm-hmm. making my way in the music business. They kind of taught me the ropes, and they were tough as well. You know, there wasn't any messing around. They were tough. But that was good. And Paul actually was commissioned by Band on the Wall, because he's a fantastic composer as well as mm-hmm. guitarist, to write a piece. And he called it Shouting on Swan Street. And that was for the 25th anniversary. So that was
this
in 2000. Right. Yeah, you've got it.
I've got it there.
You've got the programme right there. I haven't seen that since the night we played it, actually. Yeah, thank you. But Paul's such an amazingly talented musician, Paul Mitchell Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's so important when you look back to think there have been events to mark these occasions at Band on the Wall, and the sort of foresight to arrange that and organise it, because it takes so much organising. So, but when you look back, and we've got this album here, you know, from 1996 it was released,
yeah.
and you think, wow, next July that's going to be 30 years. And
oh, sure, yes, of course.
Yeah, so there's a sort of another anniversary there, as well as
yeah.
Band on the Wall's 50th. So,
yeah.
I think this is why, it's not just me, but I think this is why Band on the Wall is so held so affectionately by a lot of musicians, you know. And as I said before, it's a meeting point. So I used to, when I was in my mid-late 20s, I knew that if I finished a gig in Manchester, you know, and it wasn't too late,
mm-hmm.
you'd come over to Band on the Wall, and then Steve Morris would be downstairs,
mm-hmm.
the old owner. He always used to like have a cowboy hat on.
Okay.
And the musicians who'd done gigs would all meet up and congregate near the back of the room, so it didn't disturb, if we're chatting, it didn't disturb the musicians that were still
mm-hmm.
playing at the front.
Okay.
And it was just... That whole very welcoming, supportive environment. I'm not saying it was better then, like the good old days. It's great now. I mean, what has happened here is incredible. It's just different, and it's wonderful to see it all building.
And it's kept coming back.
I know.
Reopenings.
I know. Exactly. Yeah, it's better than ever now, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's incredible.
So we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of it reopening in September as well.
Wow. Oh, yeah, I'll definitely be down here.
Yeah. So, next question. When we spoke on the phone, you said that you have a lot of memories from here. Can you tell me about some of your favourites?
Yeah, I think it's those moments when you play with a band, probably for the first time, yourself, if you're on
mm-hmm.
stage, and you realise it's such an important place, and the iconic kind of Band on the Wall, Dizzy Gillespie logo and all that. But also, lots of times just coming to gigs. You know, and I've just heard some fantastic gigs, and as we know, there's nothing quite like live music, mm-hmm. especially when you get it in, you know, it's so personal, it's so sort of up front in a venue that holds 100, 200, 300 mm-hmm. people. So it's just the atmosphere of the place.
Yeah.
And it's a real musician's haunt, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think I read somewhere that it's a musicianly venue. I think it very much still, it still is, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you what, it's much better backstage than it used to be.
When were you last backstage?
I think the last gig I did here, we played a gig here with Apitos, actually. The band gigs, of course, but in terms of gigging back here, it had been quite a break. I think that was just before COVID,
okay. Literally
a couple of months before. But I remember the old days, you know, there was one tiny little dressing room that was covered in graffiti. And it was, then you come out to something that looks quite sort of swanky in the public area.
Sure, yeah.
But we're sitting here now, you know, it's a massive sort of complex back here. And there's a band rehearsing around the corner. It's fantastic.
I'm glad you think so. I think so too.
Mm.
I started here 2 years ago, over 2 years ago in September, and I didn't have a job at the time. I needed to do something, and I love music and I wanted to work in music, and I started here, and it's just shaped everything for 2 years. It's been, like, I've got friends from here, and like, everyone I know that I hang out with is all from here.
Yeah, I think there's something about, you know, there's a family kind of feel to it, I think. Mm-hmm. It's interesting as well, because, you know, whether... I saw that immediately, the first time I ever even came to Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my own. I had my saxophone. I'd been on the train for about 6 hours. My parents lived in Poole Bournemouth area in Dorset. But their families had come from Manchester and Liverpool.
Yeah.
So when I said, I'm going to audition at this music college in Manchester, they were like, all right, yeah, that'd be great. Go on then. So I was on the train on my own and totally lost. But I remember that first impression of Manchester, and people were just talking to me,
mm-hmm.
saying, oh, what are you doing up here? And, you know, where are you going? And blah, blah, blah. It was just, I hadn't experienced that before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that warmth of the people. And that has stayed with me because I compose a lot of music, and people fortunately play my music kind of around the world, whether that's brass bands or orchestras mm-hmm. or smaller combinations of musicians. And I wrote was called Mancunity, which was an hour-long piece of music. It opened Manchester Jazz Festival in 2019. It was a commission from Steve Mead and the Jazz Festival.
Mm.
And then I wrote another piece, but this was for a brass band that's been played again around the world, fortunately, called Defiance.
Mm-hmm.
And that was after the atrocity of what happened, you know, with the bombing in Manchester.
Sure.
The most recent one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just to do with the spirit of the people of Manchester. You know, there's this defiance, there's this, they're not going to take, I can't swear, but,
you know.
they're not going to take any shit from anyone, are they? It's really, really good. And,
but they're supposed to look after you too.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. And I was saying about, you know, the most recent explosion, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was, I remember it. It was actually on my birthday, 15th of June,
really?
1996. And that was the IRA bomb mm-hmm. that went off. But I was in Manchester that day. Mm-hmm. And that I think, I'm not sure if I'm right, but I think that was planned to have been when the first Manchester Jazz Festival was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I might be wrong. I might be a year or two out. But they had to postpone it because of that. But so there are all these kind of associations with Manchester itself, and Band on the Wall is just known throughout the world. You know, as a travelling musician who goes to different countries and plays worldwide, you know, I can talk to Band on the Wall, and it seems that most people know it, you know. So, which is true, you know, so.
So this wasn't one of my prepared questions, but just because you've got talking about it, and I just love hearing about it. What did this area of Manchester look like then? What was it like?
It was pretty run down,
mm-hmm.
if I'm honest.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there's a fantastic saxophone repairer called John Clark.
Mm-hmm.
John, actually, for years now, he's been based at Johnny Roadhouse's shop upstairs doing his repairs on Oxford Road near the RNCM. But years ago, he used to have a shop just around the corner from here on Tibbs Street. Mm. And Tibbs Street was dodgy. But, you know, and I suppose what we've seen is this whole explosion. You know, look what, Ancoats, mm. and what's happened there, and where's it going to expand to next? Mm. But I think the beauty of Manchester is that it's, yes, there's a lot of development everywhere you look, but also there's a respect for the past, mm-hmm. for the architecture, for the buildings, for the kind of history. That's kind of reflected as well with Band on the Wall. And what I'm thinking of is, I mentioned Steve Morris before. Yeah. There's that lovely little, by the bar downstairs in the main room, there's that little, I think, is there a little quote from Steve? But there's certainly a picture of him. On the wall there, and I just think those touches are so kind of important. And I really hope, I'm really hoping I can revisit with the band, with the Satsok group, yeah, in July next year. I mean, I don't know whether it's wishful thinking, but mm-hmm. certainly the players in it, you know, are largely the same mm-hmm. as from 30 years ago, and everyone's like, obviously, you know, we were sort of new to the music business, all of us then, but everyone is pretty well established and playing really, really well. So
coming together to do that.
Yeah, exactly, because I think what you get is a loyalty. Mm. You get a loyalty with musicians, and I think sometimes people don't understand this, and I'm going to go on to a slightly political okay. side of things, because the group is 12 musicians, and the current lineup when we gig is all male. So there were female musicians in the band when we started off, like someone like Nikki Isles, incredible, mm. you know, keyboard player, composer. But then she moved to London. Suzanne Higgins was in it, and then she ended up moving to Berlin. Mm. So it ended up as being sort of 12 male musicians. And sometimes I'm asked, oh, why aren't there any females in the band? You know, and it's mm. like, well, yeah, listen, there are so many good female saxophone players, more so than ever mm-hmm. at the moment. You know, it's incredible. But also, and sometimes people forget this, there's a question of loyalty. Mm-hmm. If you've run a band and people have done gigs for you for not much money or rehearsals and they've never let you down, mm-hmm. you're not going to turn around and just say, oh, I'm really sorry, I need to have 5 females in the band, thanks for everything.
Sure.
It's not going to work like that for me.
No.
It's just... But I think on a more realistic point of view, this I know I'm rambling a bit, but I had a chat with Steve Mead, going back to the Mancunity mm-hmm. Commission, that 1 hour piece. Steve said, right, it's going to open the Jazz Festival 2019. You can pick the band you want, Andy. You can pick 12 musicians, mm-hmm. anyone you like. And I said, Steve, does it need to, you know, what's, because I know obviously Manchester Jazz Festival has their sort of equal opportunities policy, and mm. certainly by over the last 4 or 5 years, they've been aiming to get to a 50-50 point male-female musicians in the Manchester Jazz Festival, which is fantastic. Mm. And I said, do I need to bear that in mind, Steve? And Steve said to me, he said, Andy, just pick the musicians that you think are going to be best for this project mm. and that you can write for. And I thought, wow. He said, I thought that's really good. He said, my job as the festival director is to make sure the overall festival meets that balance that he wants and that other people want. So there's flexibility. It's not all black and white, I think. Mm-hmm. And as it happened anyway, I had people like, I just picked the best musicians for that particular gig. And Claire Cope's in it, amazing composer, pianist. Gemma Freese, I got her over from Leeds, keyboards, vocals. Caitlin Lang as well. I've been working with her. So we had, you know, a few young musicians at the beginning of their careers, and then right up to, you know, I won't say how old the oldest was, but it's a great range. And that's the beauty of music, because doesn't matter about age or background or anything. When you get in a room and you're making music together, it's just, how do you connect? And it's lovely. And yeah, there have been some great experiences here in terms of that kind of musical and spiritual, actually, I think, mm-hmm. Connection, whether that's seeing a gig or being part of it, you know, so.
Yeah, excellent. So I think it's kind of my last question, but we can, you know, this, mm. all that I've prepared, but we can keep going. where the venue should go in the future? What should Band on the Wall be doing next?
Well, I don't know. I'm the best person to comment about that because
I've been here since the 90s.
Well, yeah. The progress, you're right, it's been a sort of, you know, rocky journey with ups and downs along the way, but there's got to be no doubt where it's at now in terms of, I guess, stability financially, and certainly just look at the premises and everything that's happening. And also, you know, this whole thing about, it used to just be in, you know, you'd put gigs on at Band on the Wall, but now Band on the Wall's promoting using other venues. Mm. So it's expanding the sort of business model and imagination, I suppose. And that's, you know, credit to the people who've been doing that, because that's an incredible thing. I think if I had a wish about Band on the Wall, it's really simple. I just want it to be here.
Yeah, okay, that's a very good wish.
It's been a rocky road, you know. I do actually remember there was one, a Beatles rehearsal, where the building was in, we were downstairs rehearsing on the main stage, and the building needed some money. I think it was just about to close or had closed for a short period of time. And a bit of the ceiling fell down.
Oh, my goodness.
Just missed the trombonist, Paul Latham. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So they christened it Wall on the Band.
Excellent.
Yeah.
When would that have been?
I'm trying to think. I think I went to see a Beatles play from 1985. When I was a student, I probably started depping with them because Munch Manship was the sax player and still plays with them sometimes. And Phil Chapman, the amazing Phil Chapman, was the sax player in Epitos, and all the music, the pads of music that we use on gigs, no iPads with that band. Mm. They're all beautifully handwritten by Phil, who's sadly no longer with us. Mm. And so I started doing depths for Munch and then joined the band permanently, probably early 90s. Mm-hmm. So I was just out of college a few years. I would have been mid-20s, but they were exciting times. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, and there still is. You know, we did a gig a couple of months ago at Wakefield Jazz with the Beatles, mm-hmm. and there's so much energy to that band, and the music we're playing is so good. Mm-hmm. So it's not sort of traditional salsa. It's in between sort of Latin and jazz. So there's a lot of improvising in it and some great players. And lots of the original players are still there, so it's incredible. But yeah, I think those nights were something special, and just the vibe, just the general vibe of the place. And I think this is important because I think this, when I'm teaching, I do a little bit of teaching at the Royal Northern College.
I was going to ask that.
I started that in about 2000, mm-hmm. year 2000. But I've never done more than one day a week teaching, whatever it is in total, because I've been very aware that if I'm trying to write music and create projects and collaborations and practice my saxophone, there needs to be time to do that. And you can't do that if you're teaching all the time. So it's a real privilege kind of teaching there at the Royal Northern and running courses. But it's the constant thing I think a lot of musicians have, is juggling and tweaking that balance all the time, you know, trying to find the right balance. Mm-hmm. And then adjusting that kind of as it goes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there was something else I was going to say before, but it's gone.
So you're teaching still, and what other projects are you working on currently?
There are lots of different projects at the moment. I've just come back from Portugal doing a festival over there where they commissioned a 20-minute piece of music for mass saxophones.
Okay.
So not everything I write is for saxophones, but this is an amazing festival near Lisbon. Mm-hmm. And so I directed that and took the rehearsals, did a solo gig over there. Mm-hmm. But then I went straight to Poland, and it was another saxophone festival, actually. But coming up next 5 or 6 weeks, I'm composing music commissions. There's a group in the Netherlands who are getting a 15-minute piece from me. They want to record and play. Mm-hmm. And then I go to France, second week of September. I run some courses there. It's called Music Retreats, and it's for people just have a passion for music. So adults who play as a hobby, and a bit like Band on the Wall does, you know, with all the educational work. You know, it's never too late to pick up an instrument and start playing an instrument and just feel the kind of massive benefits that music gives. Mm. You know, the communication skills, the interaction with other people, friendships, quite apart from the buzz you get when, you know, something happens when you're playing music.
Yeah.
And anyone can do that, and everyone. You just need to, like, just keep doing it and enjoy it. So yeah, it's a mix of things, really. Oh yeah, and we've got the 25th RNCM Saxophone Day on the 2nd of November, and that was something I started with my colleague Rob Buckland in 2001, the first one. And we've got Branford Marsalis as one of our special guests this year, which is amazing, playing with Julian Joseph. And again, that's just, you know, something that brings people together.
Mm-hmm.
We get 200 or 300 saxophone players. From all over the country. There's workshops, mm-hmm. gigs, you know, you can hang out with everyone, catch up.
That's
just
the coolest hangout.
Yeah, it's the loudest. but yeah, things like that are great. And I feel I'm very, very fortunate to be a creative musician,
mm-hmm.
someone who loves collaborating, thinking of new ideas, making things happen. But actually making them happen, not just talking about them, you know. Yeah, and I think, I don't know, with Ian Kroll, you know, going back to Band on the Wall, and, you know, the fact that he did approach me after he's seen, okay, this guy can organise a band, write the music, get an audience in for a gig, and he's in his mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that must have influenced him when he approached me about the Saxalt project and the album and all that kind of thing. And I didn't have a game plan or career sort of plan or anything like that. I was just naive and just went out and did gigs because I needed some money to pay the rent, you know. So, but yeah, those things I'm extremely grateful for, because when you do get an opportunity to look back a little bit, say something like this interview and thinking about Band on the Wall, those moments are really important for a young musician, you know, having that opportunity and then having an opportunity to play at a really respected venue again helps you secure other gigs,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you feel 10 foot tall when you actually play there, you know. It's lovely. So yeah, I'm very thankful to Band on the Wall, which is why I come back, will help however I can, support it, spread the word of mouth. And as I said, let's just keep it sort of, you know, just keep it here. We don't want it closing again one day.
No, absolutely not. Excellent. So
is that right?
Yeah, perfect.